In 1969, the barriers were broken. That's when women were allowed into the national membership in FFA, and it made it possible for them to hold office and participate in competitive events at regional and national levels. Today, females represent nearly 45% of FFA membership and roughly half of all state leadership positions, and this year's national officer team boasts the most female officers ever, with 5 out of 6. And as it happens, 2016 marks the 40th anniversary of the first ever female elected to a national FFA office. Her name is Julie Smiley Foster, and she joins us today for the show. Julie, hello. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Well, to lead off today, give us a snapshot of where you grew up and the ag landscape, what it was like in your area, and of course, how you first discovered the FFA.
Well, I grew up near Mount Vernon, Washington State. My dad was in the farm implement and equipment business. It was a dairy, rural community, a lot of farming. It was a great place to grow up. There was no one else in my family that I know of who had been in FFA. And when I got to high school, there was this group of kids over in the ag building that seemed to be having a lot of fun. And I had a lot in common with them. So by the time I got to be a sophomore, I decided to take an ag class, got involved in FFA, and that's where it took off. I just enjoyed the community of students. We had a good time. And then I got into the speaking contest, and that's where I seemed to excel. And it was a lot of fun to be part of that.
So, Julie, was the choice to join different or complicated at all because women had only been allowed membership a few years earlier?
I have to be honest. It wasn't a lot of the conversation. We were in ag, and I was a student in the classroom, and this is just what we did. It was the relationships with the other students that were in FFA that I enjoyed. It was a community. It was something to be part of. And we did a lot of things together in FFA and ag activities, but we were friends outside of agriculture as well. And so that's probably a lot of the reason that I was attracted to it. I felt like I fit in there. I remember that there was the beginning of women, and yes, it was talked about, but I don't remember that it was a big deal. It was more important that we be really good at what we did.
Well, some of our listeners wanted to know, what was your SAE project?
Well, I did show a steer or two. I wasn't very good at it, but the biggest part of my project was I worked and was involved in a flower bulb company growing gladiolas and daffodils. The Skagit County, there are lots and lots of tulips and daffodils and other kinds of flower bulbs, among other agricultural products that are grown there. I think there's as many tulips grown in Skagit County as there is probably anywhere in the world. So it was big business there, and I was part of that.
You accomplished a lot in a fairly short order after joining the organization. And then, of course, you also held quite a few leadership positions. Tell us what those were.
I was chapter vice president, I believe. Carl Kragness was president, and I believe I was vice president. I was a district officer 1 year. I was state FFA president, elected in, I believe, June of 1975. Then I ran for national office.
Of course, in 1976, you were elected National FFA Vice President. Did you realize at the time that you were making history?
I think I was just really scared that I was elected, because I thought, oh boy, now what have I done? Again, it was more important to me that I be a good officer, not that I be a female officer. That was really more important to me than anything else. Coleman Harris was our national FFA advisor. He was who we answered to. And it was very important to Mr. Harris that we be professional and that we do our job properly and that we represent the organization in the very best way. And he was very serious about that, and so was I. And in the end, we are 6 officers and you have a job to do, and I expect you to do a really nice job representing the organization. He and his wife were wonderful. Could not have asked for a better officer advisor than Mr. Harris.
Well, tell us a bit about that year of service and what really stands out to you about that year.
The part I enjoyed the most was meeting the FFA students, the ag students, and their advisors and their families in their own comfort zone, in their own place. So go and see them and see how they do it in their state, in their community. That was a lot of fun. We traveled to different state conventions. We were each assigned conventions, and sometimes we went by ourselves, and sometimes there would be a couple of us go to the different state FFA conventions, and that was a lot of fun. At that time, we went on, it was called a Goodwill Tour, National Officer Tour, and we visited lots and lots of companies and organizations that support, give money, and other kinds of support to agriculture education and FFA. And that was pleasant and enjoyable, and it really opened my eyes to the size and the scope of agriculture in the United States. We did take a trip to Russia. There were four of us that had an opportunity to go on a bit of a goodwill tour to the Soviet Union. And that was extremely eye-opening to get to go to another country, the Soviet Union from the 1970s. It's just a complete eye-opener to another life, another world, another culture. We had lots to talk about. It was interesting. Just comparing notes. Sam Brownback was with us. He had lots to say about how they grew certain kinds of crops. And so there was a lot of comparison back and forth. So we had lots to talk about. We found the people just very pleasant, you know, different. The culture was different, but we enjoyed it.
Now, you went on to get a BS in agricultural journalism from Texas A&M University. And added to that, you also have 2 decades of farm and ranch experience. So seeing it from both sides, academic as well as practical, what do you see as the major challenges facing American agriculture today?
I got a wonderful education at A&M. Great friends there. Glad I majored in that. I got the best of both worlds. And what I learned while I was at A&M is that, yes, indeed, there were a lot of really bright people in the sciences and in research and development. There were a lot of people on the science side, very brilliant, very bright, absolutely knew their subject, but couldn't tell somebody else about it, could not communicate clearly to lay people what they were doing and the importance of their research. So then you have people like myself, and we had the opportunity to take all of this scientific information, read it all, and condense it into a very readable form so that lay people or people maybe not quite so familiar with the technology could understand it and understand how it related to them. And I don't know that that's changed so much. There was a lot of discussion about how there would be fewer and fewer people in production agriculture as the years passed on, and therefore there would be fewer and fewer people who had direct connection with the growing of, the harvesting, and the caring for livestock, how food is grown, you know, where does it come from, and how does it get into the grocery store. And I see today, as a teacher in the public school, that most of my students do not understand where their food comes from. And I know there's a great movement in this country to go back to simple, clean food. People want to have their own garden. They want to know who grew their food. They want to know how it's been handled. And I still think there's a need to let the general public know how food is raised, how livestock are treated, how they're handled. And there's a lot of skepticism about whether that food is of good quality or is it safe. I think that is always going to be an ongoing concern project for people in agriculture and the marketing of agricultural products.
So now you're a Project Lead the Way Sciences instructor and National Board Certified Teacher with the Oklahoma Career Tech. Tell us about what you're doing in that role.
Well, I got a Bachelor of Science. So I have a lot of science in my background, a lot of life sciences, and I started teaching sciences in Oklahoma, and then I started teaching anatomy and physiology, which was very interesting, and so I continue to teach in the Biosciences and Medicine Academy here at Francis Tuttle Technology Center here in Oklahoma City. I have students who are interested in healthcare careers, and they have a career tech student organization called HOSA, Future Health Professionals. And HOSA is, to my students in healthcare careers education, what FFA is to students in agriculture education. So I am a HOSA advisor, And I have students who will compete at the state HOSA contest, but their contests will be more like CPR and first aid. So I have students that are really interested. We're in an optional academy, pre-college, pre-AP and AP rigor. So we have good students. They're a lot of fun, got a lot of energy, really bright students. And we talk about healthcare and the human body, and I teach Project Lead the Way classes. The one course I'm going to teach this year, which is a new teaching assignment for me, is the senior capstone project called Biomedical Innovation. And my students will do a research project, write a literature review, and prepare their findings in a science research poster, and then they'll make a presentation. So we're really trying to get our students ready to go to college because we know a lot of these healthcare careers require an advanced degree or a professional degree after college. That's what I'm teaching toward.
Well, as you know, it's forecasted that we'll have to feed more than 9 billion people by the year 2050. Certainly a big goal to hit. In your mind, what role should FFA and agriculture education play in meeting that challenge?
I think, and this is not an idea original with me, although what I learned in my ag classes at Mount Vernon High School was it was project-based learning. It wasn't just out of a book, but we went out and we saw and we did and we practiced and we examined and we tested things. And that's how I teach now in my anatomy classroom. We talk about the facts and we talk about the background and we learn the terminology and then we put into practice or we examine or we study. We do this in our classes because, in my opinion, that's the best way that students learn. And then remember, they got to have something, they have to have a framework to hang their information on. So the Noble Foundation here in Oklahoma has a program called the Noble Academy, and they believe that you can teach science to students through plants and soils and learning about water. And I believe that in the classroom, we can teach science using botany, and how plants grow, and about water, and about how the world works. And I just, as a science teacher now, just as a science teacher, what I see is students and people in general don't know how life works. And that's what the study of biology is all about. And so I think if we really had a deeper and better and more solid understanding of how life works, then I think when you begin to talk about agriculture and how plants grow, then people can begin to make their own connections. And I think once you begin to think different about that, then it's easier to understand how food grows and, you know, where food comes from. I'll tell you one more thing that just I don't think I will forget. And this has been, more than 10 years ago. I was teaching in another high school in another place. And we did a project. I was teaching an environmental science class, so I went to the cafeteria and saved the milk cartons, bought some potting soil, and the conservation service, if you called them, they would send you acorns to plant an oak tree. And so I called them, and they sent them to me, and I had these students. None of them came from a rural background, had never planted a seed before, didn't know how to plant a seed. And then we're absolutely delighted when that acorn, after we watered it and watched it, lo and behold, there was something green. And they had never done that before. And I thought, how sad that you can get to high school and you've never planted a seed and watched it sprout and grow. I find that amazing.
Well, to close things out today, what tips or advice might you have for current FFA members or maybe those thinking of joining the organization?
Well, the time passes very quickly. You have a few opportunities, and it's important to at least try. Something that my husband and I tried to teach our boys at home when they were growing up is we're going to do a few things, and we're going to do them well. We can't do everything, but we're going to do a few things. So I would say that. Try a few new activities, areas of interest. If you haven't been a leader before, give it a try and do a few things and do them well. Leadership is about serving other people and trying to find ways to serve and find better outcomes for the people that you serve. It's not about you, but it's about the people you serve. And somehow that gets lost.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Nice to talk to you.
Well, again, that's Julie Smiley Foster. She was the first female elected to serve as a national FFA officer, that taking place back in 1976. Of course, females allowed into the organization back in 1969. We appreciate her time joining us.